In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. On the show, we've covered the topic of sex trafficking and violence against children nearly 10 years ago. We also looked into the Pizzagate scandal, a joint investigation among citizens, law enforcement, and government agencies looking into the related sex trafficking, cybercrime, and child abuse. Every year in the United States, 800,000 children are reported missing, and 300,000 children are at risk of sexual exploitation. The U.S. State Department reports 600,000 to 800,000 people are trafficked across international borders every year. 80% are female. Half of that number are children. Recently, the Boy Scouts of America reported the filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy following multiple sexual child abuse lawsuits. Dr. Lori Handrahan has been a returning guest since 2012 discussing child pornography within the United States government, the education system, the U.S. military, and law enforcement. She authored the recently published Epidemic: America's Trade in Child Rape. Past guest, author, and investigator Nick Bryant has written about the structures and dynamics of child sex trafficking in the books The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse and Betrayal, and Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. The Franklin Scandal story revealed how high the corruption and cover-up reached, and Confession of a DC Madam did the same, plus delivered another angle on the function of blackmail and leverage within the underworld of human sex trafficking. Everyone caught a glimpse of that underworld when details of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's case made headline news. Our guest Nick Bryant brought that research forward in 2012, but print media lacked courage to run his articles. His articles on Epstein's case were eventually published, but in 2015. That same year, he acquired Epstein's black book with names, contact information, and flight logs of those flying in Epstein's private aircraft to locations such as Little St. James Island. Now that he has been reported to have committed suicide, what happens to Epstein's case and all the evidence collected? What happens to those who recruited young women for Epstein and his network? Will the United States Department of Justice follow through on Epstein's case? We're joined by Nick Bryant, who has investigated child trafficking networks for nearly two decades. He's recently drafted a petition with Change.org urging the Department of Justice to pursue the case. Nick, welcome back to Another News.
Well, I'm glad you're having me back, Jeff.
Nick, you've been researching the topic of child trafficking, human trafficking, pedophiles in positions of power, subsequent blackmail and cover-ups for many years. You've researched and wrote about Jeffrey Epstein's case and pitched the story to print media outlets in 2012, but it was all rejected. In 2015, Gawker published your work. Would you talk about your thoughts watching the Jeffrey Epstein human trafficking story unravel with intense public interest?
Well, with that, I wrote a book called The Franklin Scandal about a pedophile network that pandered kids to the rich and powerful. And I stumbled across that story in 2002. And I went to magazines. At that point, I could speak to most editors of magazines. And I said to them, I had documentation. I said, this pedophile network is for real. Now, the editors were faced with cognitive dissonance. Either they could say, well, this is a really horrific story and children are getting destroyed and we need to back Nick Bryant to help him expose this. Or they could say, Nick Bryant is crazy, and then they're absolved. They don't have to do anything. So I kind of thought that most editors would experience the cognitive dissonance and default to Nick Bryant's crazy. And I didn't think all of them would, but that's how it played out. And then I started looking into Epstein. And with these pedophile networks that pander to the rich and powerful, there's always very egregious aberrations of justice. And with Jeffrey Epstein, I picked up the police report. The police had him dead to rights. I mean, they had him molesting five underage girls. They had the girls. They had people, a number of people, that corroborated the girls. And Jeffrey Epstein gets this piddly 18-month sentence in a county jail where he spends 13 months and he has his own wing of the jail. So that's what happened there. And then again, in 2012, I went and pitched it to as many magazine editors that would talk to me. And again, same cognitive dissonance. And it's kind of ironic. Gawker, which is known as being this kind of unethical, or I wouldn't say unethical, but bullyish publication. I mean, they were the only ones that showed some morality here. I mean, and they published, I had Jeffrey Epstein's black book. I had his flight receipts. I had powerful people on his planes with girls. And they stepped up and published it. And I was just very happy that someone finally did that. And it was Gawker.
And 4 years later, it breaks through into the mainstream.
It started to play out. And then Vanity Fair actually wrote a laudatory article about me, being like the first guy to start going after Epstein and putting Jeffrey Epstein's black book on the internet in 2015. So I thought, well, I'll get some traction here. So I went back to these magazine editors that had been rejecting me all these years. And I said, you know, I know more about this than I think just about anybody. And I'd like to write an article about it. And none of them gave me an assignment, except New York Magazine gave me an assignment. And the article pertained to Les Wexner and also blackmail. And they made me make a number of changes to the article. It always happens when you're a writer. You write a magazine article. The editor says, change this, this, and this. And, you know, generally you change it. And sometimes it makes the article better. Most of the times it all depends upon the editor, really. They had me make these changes. And I said, the last paragraph is really important because the last paragraph is where I bring it all home about blackmailing powerful people. And then they wanted me to change the last paragraph. And I hadn't been published in a mainstream magazine for quite some time. So I gave them an insipid final paragraph, and then they killed it. They killed the piece. And I still haven't got my kill fee, which kind of annoys me a little bit. But one magazine did give me an opportunity to write about this, and then they ultimately ended up killing it.
It just gives us an idea of what you're experiencing getting this information out to more people. In the case of Jeffrey Epstein, you acquired his black book. As you mentioned, there are high-profile names and details documented in the book that could provide investigative leads for the Department of Justice. Will that information be used to follow up in any official investigation?
Well, now we've got William Barr saying that there's an investigation, but we're not seeing anybody indicted. In August, late August of 2019, the New York Times named six procurers of Epstein. And, I mean, named them. And nothing happened to them. They haven't been indicted. If this was a real, if the Justice Department was sincerely pursuing this, what they would do is they would indict the six procurers on multiple counts of child trafficking, which are heavy sentences, so you could easily rack up 200 or 300 years. And then you would say to the procurers, roll over on the perps and we'll give you a reasonable sentence. That's how it's always done, but it didn't happen this way. I mean, it's kind of like an article on John Gotti, and then it talks about John Gotti's six primary captains, and it names what the captains do, you know, the illegalities that the captains do, and then nothing happens. It would happen if it was organized crime, but it's certainly not happening with the Epstein case.
It's interesting you say captain because some of the procurers were called lieutenant. According to the flight logs in the black book, President Bill Clinton flew on Epstein's private plane at least 26 times during 2002 and 2003, 10 of those without Secret Service detail. Federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York accused Epstein of creating, quote, a network and operation enabling him to sexually exploit and abuse dozens of underage girls. In an unsealed indictment, He has pled not guilty to the charges. In addition to his work launching the Clinton Global Initiative, Epstein also donated $25,000 to the Clinton Foundation in 2006 through his own personal charity. That donation came after Epstein developed a close personal relationship with Bill Clinton during a month-long trip to Africa in 2002. In a statement issued by Clinton PR firm, it reads, quote, President Clinton knows nothing about the terrible crimes Jeffrey Epstein pleaded guilty to in Florida some years ago or those with which he has been recently charged in New York, end quote. You mentioned there are 20-plus contacts for former U.S. President Bill Clinton.
In that 21 contact phone numbers, yes.
Attorneys Alan Dershowitz and Gerald Lefcourt wrote in a letter, quote, Mr. Epstein was part of the original group that conceived the Clinton Global Initiative, which is described as a project bringing together a community of global leaders to devise and implement innovative solutions to some of the world's most pressing challenges. It appears that the network Epstein had organized was used as blackmail leverage to force politicians to do the bidding of the cryptocracy agenda. Would you talk about Epstein's relationship with Bill Clinton? Are there connections with the Clintons and human trafficking?
Well, there's been innuendo in that area as far as Bill Clinton. And a number of people have written about Bill Clinton's predatory sexual behavior. And there's been a number of women that have come out and said he sexually assaulted me. So Bill Clinton has a history of that. And with Jeffrey Epstein, we know that Epstein and Clinton kept in touch because there's 21 phone numbers in Epstein's black book for Clinton. So they obviously kept in touch. But the allegations of Clinton with minors in this case has not come up. I've looked for it. I've talked to people about it. And there's some other very powerful people in that black book who I know are perps, but you've got these underage girls, and this is the thing with this, these victims. You've got underage girls that generally come from lower socioeconomic dysfunctional backgrounds, and then they're molested repeatedly by Epstein and his ilk, and a lot of them fall back on drugs to ease the pain. And like with the Franklin scandal, a number of the victims that I interviewed in the Franklin scandal had criminal records because they came from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and they came from dysfunctional families. And then they went to Boys Town and then they were molested repeatedly and then they were turned on to drugs. We don't see that in the Epstein case too much, at least at this point, but in the Franklin case, if the kids performed well, they would be given drugs. So at a certain point, they're expunged. They reach a point where they're no longer marketable because they're 15 or 16 or 17 or whatever. And then they're expunged. So basically what you've got is a very, very unstable drug addict. And they're going to go on to commit crimes. And this is how the system is perfect. Because these victims go on to commit crimes or act very unorthodox, and they're easy to discredit. They discredit their own credibility. With Alan Dershowitz was like the quarterback of Jeffrey Epstein's team for that sweetheart deal. And Dershowitz he character assassinated all those girls. I mean, and some of them were followed, but they went after the girls, like with their Facebook entries and stuff like that, said they weren't credible. Professor Dershowitz is very good at discrediting victims.
He's in that black book. Is there anyone else you want to talk about that's in that black book that you think listeners should know about right now and that is important to what you're doing with the petition?
Well, the thing about the black book, it's basically all of Epstein's numbers and contacts. Now, he had a house manager named Alfredo Rodriguez, and Rodriguez circled people in the black book that the FBI concluded were material witnesses or could be material witnesses. And Alan Dershowitz's name was circled. Les Wexner's name was circled. Donald Trump's name was circled. Bill Richardson, he was the governor of New Mexico and a real Democratic hopeful at one point for president. His name was circled. Peter Soros' name was circled. I mean, there's a number of people that have a lot of power and a lot of money that were circled in Epstein's Black Book.
Material witness, is that what you said?
That's what the FBI called them, material witnesses, potential material witnesses.
And what that means is that these people could have seen something to, in the future, testify against Epstein?
Yes, yes.
They could have seen underage women being
molested
and things like
yes.
that. Okay.
Yes. Or else they could have taken, you know, I'm not saying that the people that I just named took part in molesting the girls, but that's also entirely possible too, that a number of the people. Now, there are people whose names have come up, like there's been some other names that have come up that aren't circled in the Black Book, like George Mitchell, the former senator from Maine. So his name has come up, but it's not circled in the Black Book. So that just means Alfredo Rodriguez did not see him in Florida, because Rodriguez didn't. Epstein had a place in New York. He had a place in Florida. He had a place in New Mexico. And he got away with just unbelievable stuff in New Mexico. The New Mexico governor after the governor after Richardson, his name was circled. And this is when Epstein was, I mean, Epstein would have like parades of young girls and that would follow him around in New Mexico.
Listeners know that this is a system of blackmail because it's really gotten out there into the mainstream many, many months last year. And people know that this is the way you can control politicians and get them to do what you want them to do. You just hold over, well, we have this video of you and this underage woman. You need to look the other way on this issue. It's diabolical. You know, you've written about this extensively. This is part of why this happens. Yes, there is a devious sexual undercurrent, but there's a real business aspect to this network.
Politicians have a alchemy of they're alpha males, and they're arrogant, and they're lustful. And arrogance and lust make very intelligent people very stupid. Bill Clinton is an example. I mean, it's very easy to blackmail someone. I mean, I wrote about Larry Craig. I wrote a book called Confessions of a DC Madam, where Henry Vincent had a gay escort service. And the CIS that was using his gay escort service, actually spending like $25,000 a month at his gay escort service. And this is like in the 80s. And his house was wired for audiovisual blackmail. So if you were like if you're a conservative Republican senator and there's footage of you molesting a little boy or even molesting a gay escort or having sex with a gay escort, I mean, you're owned. That's it. And Larry Craig is like such a perfect example of this. He was a very conservative senator from Idaho. And he was getting escorts from Henry Vincent, who I wrote the book about, regularly was getting escorts. And then he was busted trying to pick someone up in a Minneapolis airport bathroom. So if a guy, okay, so he was a conservative senator, and he was in Washington, D.C. for over 25 years, first as a representative, then as a senator. So he's been in Washington, D.C. for over 25 years, and he's getting gay escorts and picking guys up in bathrooms. I mean, how could that guy not be compromised? I mean, you or me with a smartphone could compromise him. So, and that's a place where Americans are very naive about sexual blackmail. And a friend of mine, he's an editor at a magazine, and his bosses will not let me get an article in that magazine. But his last boss didn't believe that there was sexual blackmail. I mean, you know, it's kind of amazing how the naivete of Americans. And sexual blackmail has been around forever. Now it's high tech because of the technology.
Yeah, it makes me think of why. How could these obstacles occur in seasoned editors of publications that you would think had seen a lot of behavior like this, and how they couldn't make those connections and understand that picture.
Well, the thing is about sexual blackmail, I mean, I've written two books about it. Jim Haugen wrote Secret Agenda, which is an amazing book that gets into sexual blackmail. We know that J. Edgar Hoover was into sexual blackmail. We know that the CIA has done sexual blackmail. They had an op called Operation Midnight Climax, where they had safe houses in San Francisco and New York where people would be blackmailed. And actually, they'd be roofied and, you know, all kinds of other stuff with the, you know, whatever the CIA is into. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. There was a muckraker who outed Alexander Hamilton was having an affair with like a 21-year-old who was married. And he was married. And a muckraker outed Hamilton. And Jefferson and Hamilton were antagonistic towards each other. And this muckraker thought that since he had outed Hamilton, that Jefferson would give him a job in his administration when he was president. And Jefferson didn't give him a job. And then he outed Jefferson for having sex with one of his slaves, Sally Hemings. So America, we have a time-honored tradition of sexual blackmail. And what's kind of amazing is a guy like J. Edgar Hoover blackmailed everybody. And it came out years afterwards. Now, if he's using blackmail in the 50s and the 60s into the 70s, I mean, why? I mean, it's kind of absurd to think that other people aren't using blackmail, in government aren't using blackmail. And I think how it works is people vote with their constituency. If you're a liberal, you vote with the liberals. If you're a conservative, you vote with the conservatives. But sometimes a marker is called in that says you've got to vote on this way. So generally these people vote with their constituencies. But when the markers are called in, that's when they vote for whatever.
A casino.
Yes. You know, there's so many things. Like a war that is all puffed up, and there's so many things that our government does that is somewhat corrupt.
And the system, you're just zooming out for a minute and looking at all this corruption with sexual blackmail, that includes huge corporations, and there's a connection with Epstein and DynCorp, I understand. Would you talk about that, please?
Well, DynCorp was busted trafficking children, younger, like pubescent girls. And it's kind of amazing. DynCorp is one of the largest military contractors in the world. I mean, there's actually a movie about them, a Hollywood movie about how they, how girls were trafficked by DynCorp, or people that worked for DynCorp trafficked girls in Eastern Europe. And Epstein, he got a lot of girls in Eastern Europe. I've been told that he actually bought some. I mean, like slavery, outright bought some in the former Eastern Bloc. So I think in those Eastern Bloc countries, it's the sex trade is very notorious. And there is a parallel between Epstein plundering underage girls in Eastern Europe and DynCorp plundering underage girls in Eastern Europe.
Nick, in your book, The Franklin Scandal, Nebraska State and Federal Grand Juries and a Former U.S. Attorney in Washington, D.C. Play Instrumental Roles in the Cover-Up, and U.S. Attorney General at the time, William Barr, was also involved. The documentation that you had access to is now sealed, includes Omaha Police Department reports, internal memos, Nebraska State Patrol reports, Nebraska Department of Social Services, Boys Town reports, victim debriefings, and hundreds of the Rings airline receipts. Would you talk about how the documentation shows how law enforcement and the judicial system are involved in covering up pedophile and human trafficking investigations?
When you see trafficking, there's major aberrations in the justice system. Like with Epstein, he was a grand jury initially found that he hadn't molested a single child and indicted him on one count of adult pandering. So with grand juries, you're listeners might not know much. When someone thinks grand jury, they think a dictum that's come down from Mount Olympus. But grand jurors are just basically citizens that have shown up for jury duty, and then they're funneled into a grand jury. And someone, a special prosecutor, is chosen to present evidence to those everyday citizens that have been funneled into this grand jury. And it all depends upon the special prosecutor. If the special prosecutor is corrupt, he will not show the grand jurors evidence that implicates who he doesn't want implicated. And if the special prosecutor isn't corrupt, then he'll, show the grand jurors all the evidence. And so grand juries have been notoriously easy to corrupt. There was a New York appellate judge that said a special prosecutor has so much power over grand jurors that he could get them to indict a ham sandwich. And that's true. And with the Franklin Network, there was two grand juries that were used in Nebraska to cover up this pedophile network. One was a federal grand jury, one was a state grand jury. Now, for me, I was able to get most of the sealed documentation and testimony from that grand jury, and that should not happen. That's against the law. But I cultivated trust with some people, and I was able to get it. And the Franklin scandal, I show exactly how one of these grand juries, because I bring the reader right into a grand jury, and I don't know if there's too many books that have done that. And I show exactly how this grand jury got corrupted. I didn't get a lot of documentation from the federal grand jury, but they came to the same conclusions that the state grand jury did. They exonerated the perps and indicted the victims that wouldn't recant accounts of their abuse.
I know you talked about this before in terms of the witnesses being very vulnerable and easily discredited. That's a big factor in this cover-up. And I heard you mention that the FBI that was investigating in the Franklin scandal had intimidated victims and told them to back off. So there's that level of cover-up as well.
The FBI intimidated everybody. The FBI intervention into that pedophile network is very early. There was a social worker who knew that something, the first victim to come forward had been in a foster care home. And this was a very, very ominous foster care home. There was like eight kids. They had like eight kids. They were getting subsidies for all eight kids, even though some of them were adopted. But none of them, but the eight kids, none of them were blood of, so the foster care parents, it's mind-boggling, starved them, beat them, and molested the older girl. And then when the older girl got to be 14, she was pandered out to this pedophile network. So, and there was a social worker, and this is very early on, this is before the case started bubbling to the surface. There was a social worker that had a bad feeling about this foster care home. And she started digging into the foster care home. And the FBI knocked on her door and said, "You've got to forget about what you're investigating right now." We strongly suggest. And these FBI agents were very malevolent and intimidating. But some perps wanted to make a deal because they didn't think that the cover-up was going to last. And the FBI threatened their lives. The FBI threatened all the kids. I mean, all the kids that came forward got threatened by the FBI. So the FBI did, and this is in Omaha. The Secret Service was used in Washington, D.C. to clean it up. But yes, I mean, these FBI agents were just malevolent.
Do you see this level of cover-up with Epstein's case?
I do, but there's a difference here. The Franklin network that I wrote about in the Franklin scandal was much bigger than the Epstein network. Okay, the Epstein network required one grand jury to cover up. The Franklin network required three grand juries, two in Nebraska and one in Washington, D.C. And there was a lot more kids. I mean, these guys were getting kids from Boys Town, from foster care, and from kids that had just fallen through the cracks. So they had an insatiable demand for children. And they were flying them to the East Coast, to the West Coast, all over. It was a much bigger network than the Epstein Network, but it was a lot like the Epstein Network in the respect that there was a lot of law enforcement corruption, and blackmail was part of it, and intelligence was part of it.
In the Franklin scandal, former State Patrol Gary Caradore, the private investigator looking into the Nebraska child trafficking, had photos of victims with adults, according to sources. He acquired those pictures in Chicago, and when he was flying back, his plane broke up over Lee County, Illinois, and he and his son were killed. In our simulcast interview at the Brooklyn Commons in January 2017, you emphasized the need to have victims come forward in bringing human traffickers and child abuser networks to justice. Would you remind listeners why this is, and talk about the successful conviction of pedophile rings and trafficking networks, please?
Well, I mean, you don't see a lot of trafficking networks going down. I mean, that's the thing. You see guys who live in trailer courts getting busted for picking up underage victims. But you don't see a lot of... I mean, there's occasionally one breakthrough, like State Patrol, some highly decorated state trooper was busted for making pornography last week. So, I mean, that does happen. But these networks that are pandering to the rich and the powerful, they pretty much operate with impunity. I mean, as far as we know, there's been the Franklin Network, and then there's been the Epstein Network. Now, I know of other networks, but I do not have the goods to really talk about them because I just haven't investigated them the way that I should have. But I've heard a lot of anecdotes about other major trafficking networks in the United States. And it took me 7 years to finally come out with the Franklin scandal. 7 years of investigation. I traveled 40,000 miles. I spent a lot of my own money. And the same thing with the Epstein investigation. Although I didn't get as deep into the Epstein investigation, I started calling up victims. And because you need victims to come forward, that's the most important thing. If you're going to do what I do, you need victims to come forward because you've got to, like, it's very easy for these guys and the people protecting them to discredit victims. But if you've got a number of victims saying the same thing, then it's hard to overcome that. But it's tough to get that critical mass of victims because they're skittish. They know the kind of powerful people that they've been molested by. They're terribly frightened of the people running the network. They're frightened of the power brokers that have molested them. And again, you know, these are little girls. In the Epstein case, these are little girls from generally dysfunctional backgrounds. I mean, with low self-esteem. I mean, it would be very, very easy to intimidate them. And I had like a list of at least 100 Epstein victims. It was hard to get them to talk to me. It was really tough.
And they're probably paid to not speak as well.
I don't know. Those guys are pretty arrogant. And once they're expunged, once the girl or boy has lost her youthful marketability, then they're pretty much expunged. And like I said, they go on to be drug addicts and commit crimes or compromise their own integrity. So that's where the system is perfect, is because you don't have to really threaten them, right? You don't really have to keep track of them because they're going to compromise their own credibility.
When you have this level of corruption on the inside covering up for pedophile networks, child trafficking networks, what do we do? How do you bring awareness to this from the inside?
Well, awareness has been growing. First of all, it was the Catholic Church, and then it was a number of sporting facilities, sporting outlets, and the crescendo there was Jerry Sandusky, and then there was Bill Clinton too. I mean, here's a president willing to take an unbelievable risk, you know, to satiate his cockeyed libido. So people are catching on to this. Now we're at a point with Epstein where it's politicians, it's power brokers, it's wealthy people. And here's what I'm trying to do. I mean, there are six procurers that are running around that are not indicted after working for Epstein for years. I mean, and God knows how many children that they're responsible for destroying. And they're running around as free as can be. And what we need now is a focused effort by Americans to say, we need justice in this situation. We need those procurers indicted, and we need the procurers to name the perps. I mean, that's what we need now. We've never had a situation like this before where there's been a pedophile network that has been outed, like Epstein has been outed. And I was in Minneapolis this summer, and I was hanging out with some friends of mine, one I played football with. I mean, these guys don't have a conspiratorial bone in their body, but they knew something really stank with Epstein, that there was a stench with Epstein. And I think most Americans know that. And we have to mobilize our outrage at this point. There was, in Belgium, there was a similar type of network that was outed. And it was it goes under the rubric of Marc Dutroux. And it was very obvious that that network was covered up. And you had tens of thousands of Belgians hit the street to protest because these people were molesting their children. And it was covered up. And we need that in the United States of America. We need some outrage because this is obviously being covered up.
It seems like the people of Omaha could have filled the streets and protested against Larry King and those associated with him. As you mentioned, you're urging the U.S. Justice Department to follow through on the Jeffrey Epstein case and specifically to go after the procurers. Nick, you're putting out a petition through change.org, and in your research for the Franklin scandal, you noted official documents identifying a group called the Finders, based in Washington, D.C. An FBI and Customs investigation definitively linked the Finders to organized sex abuse, child pornography, and blood rituals. Would you talk more about the recruitment arm of these human trafficking networks and also the procurers that worked for Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, with the Finders, that's a very strange case. And it was a cult in Washington, D.C. There were two adult Finders in Tallahassee with six kids, ranging from 2 years old to 6 years old. And the kids looked like hell. And some concerned citizens called the Tallahassee Police Department. And then the police showed up, and they arrested the two Finders and put the six kids into protective custody. And a Tallahassee police report said that at least one of the kids showed signs of sexual abuse. And then the U.S. Customs Service served search warrants on the Finders' warehouses in Washington, D.C., and they were accompanied by Metro Police, the Washington, D.C. Metro Police. And yes, they came across child pornography and a lot of, you know, very, very ominous stuff. What happened there is the CIA came in and stopped the investigations. The CIA said the Finders were an internal matter. Now, that one document, I mean, had I never seen that U.S. Customs report, I would still be living a very comfortable life in my one-bedroom apartment in Greenwich Village. But that U.S. Customs report, I mean, what? I mean, I thought to myself, what is the CIA? Well, first of all, they're not supposed to have any kind of domestic jurisdiction. I mean, that hasn't stopped them in the past. I mean, they've done all kinds of domestic things. But with the children and this cult, I mean, what's up with that? So my seven-year odyssey into the Franklin scandal was to try to understand that U.S. Customs document. And it's, do you have a copy of it, Jeff? I can email you a copy of it, and you can put it on your website, because it's a stunning document.
Years later, looking back at this, Nick, What do you think about the that initial point where you were interested or curious about learning more about the finders? Have you learned more?
Well, what I have learned is that there are pedophile networks out there that are hooked up to various facets of the government that deploy blackmail. And the Franklin network, there was a lot of pornography. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was busted with a lot of child pornography. But I don't know if he made it or he got it from somebody else. But with the Franklin network, I mean, they were making a lot of child pornography. So, but had I not come across that Finders document, I wouldn't have gotten in. I wouldn't have written the Franklin scandal. I wouldn't have started investigating the Franklin scandal, because that Finders document, I went to college and I worked at a university and I read a lot of books, and I kind of thought I knew how the world worked. I mean, I really did. I knew that the CIA was fomenting coups around the country to protect multinational corporations. I mean, I knew that. But then for the CIA to be covering up for this cult that is seemingly trafficking children, I mean, that, I said to myself, you know, there's something in this world I've obviously missed big time, because I can't make any sense of this document. So that's what started my foray into this world.
You know, I mentioned this because even the name Finders, finding the children or the to be victims, but you have this recruiting in pedophile networks and child trafficking networks, of course, the procurers that you mentioned. There's some heavy weight of blame on these people to do. You can't innocently do that work and not know what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nick, just to go back to that article you mentioned about Les Wexner, that article was about a murder in broad daylight of a Columbus, Ohio attorney named Arthur Shapiro, a prominent attorney who worked for the firm that represented retail empire, The Limited. Les Wexner runs The Limited. Jeffrey Epstein became involved in working with Wexner's corporate affairs. It's an interesting article because it examines evidence that contradicts Wexner's statement about how well he knew Epstein.
Yes, I mean, the thing about Wexner and Epstein, I mean, Wexner gave Epstein power of attorney over his entire empire. I mean, we're talking like Victoria's Secret, L Brands, although he's recently stepping down from Victoria's Secret. But, I mean, he gave Epstein the keys to the kingdom, and they hadn't known each other that long. Now, what's kind of interesting with that is, and the article I wrote was, I looked at Wexner's background, and, okay, so there was an attorney that worked for Wexner's L Brands, and he was shot execution style, two bullets in the back of the head, middle of the day, well, actually in the morning. And so I got this police report, and actually I was very lucky to get this police report because the Omaha police chief ordered that report to be destroyed. So what happened there was this police report connected Les Wexner to organized crime. It said that he was involved with the Genovese crime family. And then I found, I did some additional research, and I found that there was a trucking company that moved up to 90% of Wexner's merchandise that was an appendage of the Genovese family. So through two separate routes, connect Les Wexner with organized crime. Now, you could say, I mean, given that Les Wexner is giving Epstein, inexplicably giving Epstein the keys to his kingdom to do whatever he wants. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein could have done whatever he wanted with that empire. I mean, he had complete autonomy. Was Les Wexner a blackmail mark? And this is where it gets interesting, because Les Wexner had access to the Genovese crime family. And how is Jeffrey Epstein going to blackmail someone like Les Wexner? I mean, Les Wexner just has to go to his contact in the Genovese crime family and say, you know, this guy's trying to blackmail me. And Jeffrey Epstein is a college dropout from Coney Island. I mean, how is he going to blackmail someone like Les Wexner? The reason why he's going to blackmail someone like Les Wexner is he's got a network behind him. And Alexander Acosta, when he was being interviewed to be the labor secretary under Trump, he was asked why he backed away from Epstein. And he said that he was told that Epstein was intelligence and that it was above his pay grade. So with Epstein and also with the Perps and the Franklin scandal, you've got connections to the intelligence. I would probably say that most people in the CIA don't even know that this dark pocket exists. But there is a very dark pocket of intelligence, whether it be CIA or NSA or whoever, that does blackmail people.
Mossad connections as well.
Yes, there's Mossad connections. But here's the thing. I can't imagine that the CIA would let the Mossad blackmail American politicians in America without getting a cut of the intelligence. I just can't imagine that. So if the Mossad was part of this, I mean, it had to be working with that dark pocket of the CIA. That's how I feel about it.
And Nick, you mentioned that article was killed recently for New York Magazine.
New York Magazine, yes.
Initially, Epstein came under investigation by Palm Beach police in March of 2005. The charges would have been for crimes tied to his sexual behavior with underage females at his home. Epstein evaded federal charges with a sex offender plea deal and served 13 months for prostitution in the private wing of a county jail. In 2018, that deal came under fire when Miami Herald reporter Julie Brown published a series on Epstein's crimes, his victims, and those who brokered his less harsh sentence, which is Acosta helped do that. He was then arrested July 6, 2019 for sexually exploiting and abusing dozens of underage girls at his homes in Manhattan, New York, and Palm Beach, Florida. On Saturday, August 10, 2019, at approximately 6:30 a.m., he was found unresponsive in his cell in the special housing unit from an apparent suicide at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan. U.S. Attorney Barr defends the coroner's ruling of the suicide. Would you please talk about U.S. Attorney General's involvement in Epstein's case and why it was recommended that he recuse himself?
Well, it was recommended that he recuse himself because he had been in a law firm that had represented Jeffrey Epstein. But the thing about William Barr is he is dirty. He's a very dirty guy. And he was Bush the Elder's attorney general when the Justice Department covered up the Franklin Network. And now he's in the process of covering up the Epstein Network.
I just want to mention covering up the Franklin Network, and that had to do with the grand jury trial on the federal level. Is that correct?
Actually, there were two grand juries on the federal level. There was one in Nebraska, and there was one in Washington, D.C. And then you had the FBI, very proactive. The FBI is ultimately under the purview of the Department of Justice. You had the FBI very proactive in making sure that the dominoes didn't fall in Omaha, because if the dominoes had started to fall in Omaha, they would have fallen all the way to Washington, D.C., much like, I think, the Epstein case.
Okay, that's good background. Interesting connections here with U.S. Attorney William Barr. So he agreed with the coroner's ruling of suicide, and he did not recuse himself. So how do you think this is going to play out?
Well, he's going to try to cover this up, obviously. The thing about it is, it's kind of funny. At MCC, the Metropolitan Correctional Facility in the federal facility in Manhattan, if you are on suicide watch, there is someone at your door, your cell door, all day and all night, and they check on you every 15 minutes. Because I talked to someone who was on suicide watch at MCC, and And here we have, in this situation, it's kind of mind-boggling. The cameras don't work. His cellmate is taken out. The guards are asleep. One's not even a guard there. I mean, there's just so many anomalies that I think a lot of Americans believe that he killed himself. Now, what Barr is up to now is he's trying to cover this up. I mean, he's not going after the procurers. It's kind of funny. When there's an ongoing investigation, the FBI or Justice Department generally never talks about it. They'll just say it's an ongoing investigation. Now, they're talking about this investigation. They're talking about interviewing Prince Andrew, and he wasn't very compatible with the FBI questions, and you got the FBI interviewing this person. Now, this is such a sham because all they have to do is pick up the procurers and indict them for child trafficking, and then they go after the perps. So what Barr is doing here is basically the same thing that he did in Nebraska to cover up the Franklin Network.
Nick Bryant, the perps, this is reaching up to people in positions of power and the royal family potentially. And most people listening will say, well, that's why they're not following through. There's too much power there that's stopping that investigation. Nick, you're putting out a petition through change.org. Can you tell listeners more about that and how they can help?
Okay, that petition, we've already collected 1,300 signatures. What we're trying to do is foment some outrage for all these children that have been abused with impunity and their abuse covered up. And what I'm trying to do now is partner with anti-trafficking, anti-child abuse organizations. And I would like to create certainly at least one demonstration and put some heat on the government. And if they're going to cover this up, they're going to cover it up. But Americans cannot, as a society, we cannot allow the Department of Justice to cover this up and do nothing. I mean, these are American children. We've got to draw a line in the sand. If the Department of Justice lets known perpetrators in a proven case of sexual abuse scot-free, I mean, all perpetrators will be empowered. If the Department of Justice is indifferent towards children in a proven case that have been sexually abused, what chance do other sexual abuse victims have? If the highest justice entity in the land is going to allow children to be trafficked in the United States of America, that is something that is horrific, and we have to do something about it. Like I said, as a society, we cannot let this happen, at least not without outrage, not without our voice being heard.
It's understood that Epstein had hours of video and audio of clients at his homes. I suspect this is the evidence that the U.S. Department of Justice has confiscated, the smoking gun in effect. But the way things are going, that can be accidentally destroyed. Have you heard any updates on this evidence?
I have not, no.
You've experienced some harassment from the IRS and possible stalking. Would you tell listeners about this?
Well, with the Franklin scandal, I was my life was threatened once. I was followed. I was with a very infamous guy. He'd been a blackmail photographer for the network. And we were in Nebraska, and my car was pulled over and completely ripped apart, the rental car that I had. And that was the most frightened I'd been through the whole thing. But I was on this 7-year odyssey into the belly of the beast. And yes, there was a lot of harassment. I mean, the IRS audited me. Was it just my time to be audited? Was I pulled out of the hat? I mean, I really can't speak to that, but I can speak to a tremendous amount of harassment against and some very, very strange phone calls.
As you mentioned, Nick, there's a collective reluctance to address this epidemic. And looking through another lens, Paul Levy, author of Dispelling Wat'iko, said something interesting. And the word Wat'iko, a Cree Indian term referencing a spiritual virus, born out of fear of lacking and detachment, a term synonymous with the nature of the Jungian psychological theory of the human shadow. Paul Levy says if we ignore the shadow, such as child trafficking, the pedophile networks and the protectors, it gets worse. He writes, when we are unaware of it, we then become an instrument through which it acts itself out in life. While doing that, it hides itself from being seen. We become even more entrenched in the viewpoint that evil is outside of ourselves. If we don't see it, we become another unwitting person propagating the Wotico virus. I think this is another way in how child sex abuse continues. A collective attitude might be to perceive that level of evil being external to them. It's not external, Levy is saying. We're all responsible in the larger context. Nick Bryant, author of The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse and Betrayal, and Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. You stayed on this topic despite the obstacles and interference. Thank you for the commitment to sound the alarm on pedophile networks and to help dislodge entrenched systems of blackmail within political systems. Thank you for being on Another News.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.